From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Coming up on the program today, plastics. They're all around us, including in our water, and that's led to legislation and a new exhibit at the Museum of Science and Industry. We'll be talking about all of that in about 15 minutes. But first, everyone is feeling a pinch in their wallet these days, or maybe in our bank statements, because a lot of us don't even carry wallets anymore, but I digress. From gas to groceries to power and gas bills, it seems like our economy has been a drag lately. And yet, employment remains strong, wages have gone up too. And on the third hand, buying a home has become significantly more expensive, with mortgage rates at a generational high. So today we want to get into what the future holds for our economy. Joining us to talk more about this is Dale Dirkholz, a retired economist from Growmark and the Farm Bureau. He's going to be walking us through some of the latest things that we've learned about what's going on with our economy and what we might expect in the months and years ahead. Dale, welcome to the 21st Show.
Good morning to you, Brian, and a nice day it is in central Illinois.
Indeed it is. And listeners, you can join our conversation as well at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. All right, a lot of ground to cover today. So I want to begin with the inflation puzzle, right? Last year we saw significant spikes or increases in our food and gas prices. People had all kinds of ideas at the time, too much federal spending in the pandemic, or on the other hand, you'd hear corporate greed taking advantage of all the news stories about supply chain disruptions. What today is our best understanding of what drove the inflation that we saw to the highest level, again, in more than a generation?
Yeah, it's really a broad combination of things. One of them I'll point out, I think the Federal Reserve actually kept interest rates too low too long from the 2008-2009 economic crisis all the way up until recent, and that kind of allowed some things to quote-unquote fester in the background that really was unseen. But when we hit the pandemic and then coming out of the pandemic, you know, you had on the table first. And it real is a realistic supply chain disruption. So, you know, you had fewer goods for people to buy. And during the pandemic, as we all learned, the government gave people a lot of money. So you had a lot of money chasing fewer goods, which is always an argument for inflation. Then along came the way when we came out of the pandemic, the economy started to grow. So energy demand started to rebound, and we came from an unusually low level in energy. Crude oil for a very short period actually went negative, and that was due to some specific storage problems. So you had energy prices that started to fuel and move up. Then we come along into the war that we have between Russia and Ukraine that further heightened the anxiety in the energy market and drove them even higher yet. And higher energy prices, that flows all the way back through the pipeline and causes transportation costs to go up, you know, to get goods to market. So, you know, you just kept all of this coming along. And then because of the pandemic and because of the post-pandemic disruptions, you know, we lost people in the employment sector. So all of a sudden you had this growth in jobs, but you didn't have as many people looking to go back to work. So, you know, you forced companies to pay higher wages than they otherwise might be willing to pay. And so there was just a whole flurry of different things that happened along the way in there that really drove what's happened over the last 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, and the inflation rate, I just want to emphasize to people, it's really come down, right? We saw it last year, it was 8.5% around this time, I think. Now it's 3.18 I've seen. It was even, I guess, last month it was down below 3%. I mean,
well,
that's, you go ahead.
It has and it hasn't. You know, if you look at consumer prices, all goods, you know, I mean, we were at about 8.5%. You're right about that. But the core there, which is minus food and energy, actually peaked out at about 6.3. Now, the total inflation has declined a lot. We're down just over 3% at this point, but the core is still hanging up there roughly about 5 once you take food and energy out of the mix at this point. So, you know, we still have inflation that's running well above Fed targets, and at this point, which is 2% as they've used for a long time. You know, and so you continue to have this fuel in place. Is the Fed going to be forced at some point to raise rates even more? And I think probably will, although we may be in a position here to at least have a temporary pause.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the Fed then, because I'm gonna grossly oversimplify this. Correct me if I'm wrong, if you want to. But, you know, the Fed's role in taming inflation, what they have to do is basically put the brakes on the economy. Some would argue wreck the economy, possibly, if they slam the brakes too hard in order to slow growth. Maybe employment suffers in that equation because they're trying to hit, as you said, this 2% target. Is that even still the goal we should be aiming for? Maybe let's take that first as a baseline question.
That's an argument really beyond the time we have to work with here today.
But, you know, it's fair, fair enough.
Point, there has been some talk. Maybe the Fed needs to adjust that up a little bit. But that's another story for another day, I think. But, you know, realistically, what a lot of people need to understand, the Fed only really controls one interest rate, and that's the overnight Fed funds rate. And that's up roughly about 5.5% right now. But see, we'd kept that at zero for such a long time, and they had been buying securities back post the economic problem in 2008, 2009 to keep money available out in the pipeline. And you know, we just ended up with this huge supply of money and some things going on, like I say, in the background that weren't totally apparent. And then, you know, we hit the pandemic, which everything hit the brakes, and then we reverse course and we come out of this, and all of a sudden you just lit a match to everything, it looks like, and away things went. I'm still seeing some things when I look at the broad spectrum of commodities, for example, that still tell me that even though inflation has come down for the moment, you know, I think we've got to worry that it'll catch a breath here and start turning higher again at some point in time. So we've got to be real careful. But there are some things, the housing market in particular is starting to come down, but the housing market itself reached just totally untenable levels in this environment.
Yeah. Well, that's actually a good pivot to that, because I wanted to ask you about that. You appropriately said the Fed, right, they have this one rate they control, but, you know, we pay a lot of attention to it. And I think the way that most consumers really feel the trickle-down effects of these rate changes is, one, if they have a bank account that gives them a decent interest rate, which is increasingly rare in this day and age, unless you're going to one of these online banks that's using higher rates to incentivize people to put their money there. But the other big one, as you said, is mortgages. And we certainly have seen mortgage rates going up 7%, whereas just a couple of years ago, people in the middle of the pandemic were refinancing for 2%. Now, this seems high to a lot of people. I know my mom has talked about a mortgage rate way back in the day of 10% or more. But talk about that. This is really making a difference in people's lives, seeing these higher mortgage rates here.
You know, one broad comment I would make here is that people really need to go back and start looking at events that unfolded in the late 1970s and into the early 1980s, because there is some admittedly broad parallel, but at least some lessons that we could learn out of that. And I've been telling this to people now for about 2.5-3 years. But what we've done here at this point with mortgage rates coupled up with housing prices skyrocketing, because all of a sudden we weren't building new homes, and so you really started to shrink the supply of houses. But here on, this was some Case-Shiller numbers, monthly cost to buy a house was up at roughly about, and this is average in the U.S., about $2,700. If we go back about 3 years, we were at about $1,500. And that's really a combination of both housing prices going up and the skyrocketing cost of mortgages going from roughly about 3% on 30 years to where I've heard today of some 8% on those. And, you know, you're getting mortgage rates up to a point and the cost to buy a house to where people just literally cannot afford them. So I think we're starting to see some cracks in the dike on housing, to where housing prices are going to start to weaken. But the mortgage costs themselves, even though the demand for new mortgages is really evaporating, we're at the lowest level of new mortgages going back to, I think, 1995. You know, that's going to be still somewhat driven by people's attitudes on inflation and the Fed's attitude as far as interest rates. So I don't think mortgage rates are going to subside significantly at any point in time. We could see a little moderation. We could see a little bit of weakening in it, but I don't see any real decline. And if inflation catches again, you know, the Fed will tweak rates higher again. There's thoughts that, you know, somewhere in the next year we're going to drive rates higher yet, that's going to keep these mortgage rates high. So home ownership is going to be a problem. By example, the average rent on an apartment is $1,800. So right now it's more advantageous in one sense to rent a place to live than it is to buy it.
So yeah, well, that's actually a good point. So what consequences do we see from these sustained higher rates, right? I mean, it's harder for people and businesses to borrow money. What are the downstream consequences of that?
Well, the downstream consequences are that the housing market's gonna have a pretty hard retraction at some point in time. But the one thing that's going on right now, you know, there are a lot of rates that were put in place here over the last number of years that are 3%, maybe even 4% on 30-year. And the one thing we're seeing in the housing market, I think, right now is people literally cannot move if they would want to move. Simply that I'm going to give up a mortgage rate that's 3%, 4% rate tied to it and have to go into one that's 8%. And I can't afford that new higher payment unless I'm buying a significantly smaller home that's a lot cheaper home. So, you know, it's really created a lot of difficulty in the whole housing sector. And I think a lot of things that have happened, and one thing that's different from the late 1970s into the very beginning of the 1980s, by the way, 30-year mortgages back then peaked out at around 16-17% if people want a little bit of shock in their system. But I think it was just this sudden shift in change here that really has caused a lot of disruption, and I think that's going to be with us for a while. We're going to have a lot of disruption in a lot of sectors of the economy because of the sudden change of everything all at once and seemingly overnight.
All right, let's see if we can work a call in here. Do not have a great deal of time, but Paul is calling from Urbana on line one. Paul, briefly, thank you for calling in. What's your question?
Well, I just wanted to mention that the host gave the idea that corporate greed is something that ought to be accounted for, and the Economic Policy Institute has an interesting chart that I texted all over the place when it first came out. I think the guest just gives short shrift to the amount of just overwhelming greed and has affected the inflation rate.
All right, Paul. Thank you for that question. Let's let him respond to that. And let me just remind listeners, we're talking with Dale Dirkholz, who is a retired economist from Growmark and the Farm Bureau. So what do you think about that? I've definitely heard this story that we in the media, by doing, like we did a segment on the show last year about barge traffic on the Mississippi and all these supply chain disruptions, and more than companies actually having problems getting components or having supply chain disruptions, they saw, boy, this is just a really good opportunity for us to sort of raise prices, and we can just point to all these media reports about all the problems in the economy. What do you think of that argument?
You get into some sectors, though, and I mean, you know, some places you could talk maybe there is some issues with corporate greed, but when you get into a lot of sectors of the economy, barge freights, for example, you mentioned that, you did it a year ago, it's basically just the supply-demand function. You know, you got so many people that need a barge because they want to move grain downriver, fertilizer back upriver, and so many people out there that are demanding the fertilizer, or demanding the grain. You know, it's just a supply-demand factor that really regulates that sector of the economy. The same can be said for what we see here today in a broad generality as far as the commodity sector is concerned. So you got to be careful on saying or putting out a blanket statement that there is corporate greed, because, you know, a lot of cases, you know, when you get into the end game, it's this classic economics, supply versus demand, too much money chasing too few products, you know, and you know, if I need a bushel of grain today to grind into something else, I'm going to pay whatever I have to get it to keep my plant running. So, you know, there's a lot of variables that go into a lot of this, and I think you could point to corporate greed in some cases, but I don't think there's a blanket generality that you can really apply to a lot of sectors per se.
Yeah. All right. We've only got about a minute left. I wonder if we can briefly just touch on the idea that we've been hearing predictions of a recession for a long time. it hasn't come yet. I mean, economic history tells us it will come eventually. What do you think about that? How are you thinking about this? What are you watching for?
Well, the one thing, I've got a friend that's a quote-unquote classic economist up in the Chicago area. He's about my age. And he thinks it's going to be an unusual recession, and you know, we're not going to have the classic unemployment like we typically do, simply because of variables in the job market. But we could see, you know, the economy slow down certainly at some point in time. Briefly, I think probably one sector to keep an eye on at this point, kind of leading indicator, so to speak, would be the housing market, and see what goes on in the housing market, maybe even then in the auto sector at this point. You know, I heard a story the other day, to buy a new Ford truck, $1,000 a month car payment. Who can afford it?
Wow.
You're sitting here looking at things like that, you know, and at some point, you know, and we're running out of the money that people socked away in savings from the pandemic. So, and we've got credit numbers rising at this point in time, the amount of money we have extended out there on mm-hmm. credit cards. And mm-hmm. then, as you know, your listening yep. audience will know, we got student loans that are going to kick in here pretty soon too.
100%. All right, we're going to have to leave it there. Dale Dirkholz is a semi-retired commodity and economic analyst. Thank you so much for being with us. And I will just say, more to come after a short break. This is the 21st Show.